Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the Murder Tape Chronicles. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present Sinner's Parade, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1: The Art of Deception. New Orleans lives and dies by the beat of its own drum, the rhythm of its streets, the sway of bodies moving in time with the parade floats that roll through the quarter every damn year. It's a city built on sin, soaked in the sweat of a million secrets, where the music never stops and the dead don't always stay buried. I should know, because I put some of them there. My name's Elliot Mercer, and I build the kind of floats that stop a city. The ones people write about, the ones they snap photos of, eyes wide with wonder. They call me a visionary, a master sculptor, the king of Mardi Gras. But what they don't know is that my art isn't just about fiberglass and paint. It's about something deeper, something darker. It started the night I killed Rick Fontaine. I wasn't always a killer. I was just a man with a temper, a past I'd rather forget, and a talent for turning wood and wire into something spectacular. Rick was the kind of guy who thought money made him untouchable. He ran Club Orleans, one of those high-end backroom gambling spots where you could buy anything if you had the right price. He wanted a float, custom-built, bigger than life, something that would scream power when it rolled down Bourbon Street. I gave him exactly what he asked for. Spent 2 months on that job, poured everything into it, every detail, every goddamn inch of it. When the deadline came, I showed up at his club, invoice in hand, expecting my cut. Rick laughed in my face. "You think I'm paying full price for that piece of shit?" he scoffed, swirling a glass of bourbon in one hand, cigar in the other. His boys, two muscle-bound goons standing behind him, snickered. That laugh, that fucking laugh. It did something to me. "That wasn't the deal," I said, keeping my voice even. "We agreed on 60 grand. Rick leaned back, exhaling smoke like he was some kind of king. "You'll take 40 and be grateful. Or you'll take a walk out of here with nothing. Your choice." My fists clenched. My jaw locked. I should have walked away. Should have swallowed my pride and let it go. But the thing about men like Rick? They don't just cheat you once. They do it again. And again. Until you stop them. I don't remember grabbing the wrench from my toolbox. I don't remember swinging. I just remember the sound, a wet, thick crunch as metal met bone. The way Rick's face caved in like a rotten melon. The way his glass of bourbon slipped from his fingers, spilling like blood across the polished bar. The goons moved, but I was faster. Maybe it was adrenaline. Maybe it was something worse. One swing to the knee, a sickening pop. A second to the skull, and the first one was down. The second, he got a few punches in, cracked my ribs, split my lip, but the knife in my back pocket found his throat, and suddenly, the only sound left in the room was my own ragged breathing. Three bodies. Three problems. I stood there, hands shaking, heart pounding. Blood on my clothes, on my tools, on the floor. No one saw. No one knew. And then my eyes flicked to the float. The massive king of carnival, still unfinished, standing in the corner of my workshop like a silent witness. And I had an idea. The first burial. Disposing of bodies ain't like in the movies. You don't just dig a hole and call it a day. You gotta think. You gotta be smart. You gotta make sure no one ever finds what you've done. I had time. The club was empty that night, Rick's crew off for the weekend. I loaded them into my van, drove them to the warehouse where I did most of my work, and got to it. Cutting the bodies apart wasn't the hardest part. It was the smell. The way blood turns thick when it pools too long. The way flesh peels away from bone if you don't move fast enough. It's messy work, but I wasn't new to it. My old man was a butcher. I learned young how to take something apart, piece by piece, until there was nothing left but scraps. Rick's torso fit neatly into the hollow chest of the float's massive king. His head, that went inside one of the papier-mâché skulls decorating the frame. The others were broken down even further, woven into the design, hidden where no one would ever think to look. By the time I was done, they weren't bodies anymore. They were art. When that float rolled down Bourbon Street a week later, No one knew they were cheering for a graveyard. No one knew that beneath the glitter and gold, beneath the feathers and sequins, there was death. And I realized something that night, as I stood among the roaring crowds, watching the float pass by. I could get away with it. I could keep doing it. A business of blood. One body turned into two. Two turned into five. I didn't kill for fun. I didn't kill for sport. I killed because some people needed killing. A drug dealer who thought it was funny to lace his product with fentanyl and leave teenagers dead in back alleys. A cop who took bribes to look the other way when women went missing from the quarter. A man who put his hands on my little sister when she said no. Every year, my floats got bigger, more elaborate, more detailed, and every year, more people disappeared. The city didn't notice. The cops didn't care. New Orleans is a place built on blood, a place where history forgets the ones no one misses. And then this year, something changed. The mayor wanted a showstopper. The biggest float in the city's history, one that would roll straight through the heart of the quarter with a fire-breathing devil at its core. They called it the Devil's Procession. Fitting. Because this year, I had more bodies to hide than ever before. A storm brewing. I knew it couldn't last forever. Nothing this good ever does. 3 days before the festival, I started noticing footsteps outside my warehouse at night. Shadows that shouldn't have been there. A car parked across the street too many times to be a coincidence. And then I found the letter. Slipped under my door. No name. No return address. Just five words, written in perfectly neat handwriting. I know what you do. That was when I knew someone was watching. And if I didn't figure out who, I'd be the next one to disappear. Chapter 2, Blood on the Beads. I didn't sleep that night. Not because of guilt, I buried that part of myself a long time ago, but because of something far worse. Uncertainty. I sat in the dark of my workshop, the single exposed bulb swaying overhead, casting jagged shadows over the half-finished skeleton of the Devil's Procession float. The thing loomed over me, its massive frame a chaotic mess of twisted wire and fiberglass. It wasn't finished yet, but it would be soon. Just in time for the parade. The letter sat on my workbench. I know what you do. Five words. No name. No return address. No threat. Just certainty. Whoever left it didn't ask for money. They didn't demand anything. They just wanted me to know that they saw me. And that meant one of two things. Either they were watching and waiting, or they were already inside my world. A shadow in the city. I stepped outside just before dawn, the humid New Orleans air pressing against my skin. Bourbon Street was never really empty, not even at this hour. A few drunk stragglers still stumbled along the cracked sidewalks, neon signs flickering in the distance, the stink of piss and spilled booze clinging to the air. I scanned the street. Nothing. No sign of the car I'd seen parked across from my shop the night before. No lingering figures lurking in the alley. But that didn't mean they weren't there. Whoever was watching me wasn't sloppy. They weren't making mistakes. And that meant they were a threat. I checked my pocket, feeling the cool metal of the switchblade tucked inside. Not my usual tool, but easy, quick. A slit throat didn't need cleanup. If someone was hunting me, I'd hunt them first. A visitor. I spent the next day at the workshop, finishing the final structure of the Devil's Procession. The massive float was damn near complete, towering 15 feet high, its sculpted demon rising above the chaos like a god of sin and suffering. And inside its hollow chest? Carter Mills. He'd been a problem. A private investigator sniffing around where he shouldn't have been. I had put an end to that. His torso was tucked neatly inside the demon's ribcage, his limbs twisted and packed between the framework, hidden beneath layers of papier-mâché. By the time the parade rolled through the city, he'd be part of the spectacle. I was securing the final panel when I heard the knock. Sharp. Three beats. Not hesitant. Not weak. I wiped my hands on my jeans, feeling the weight of the knife in my pocket as I moved toward the door. And when I opened it, I found a woman standing there. Elise. The woman who knew too much. She was tall, lean, and dangerous in the way only certain people are. The kind who don't need to announce themselves. The kind who move through the world knowing exactly what they're capable of. Her lips were painted red, her dress was expensive, and her eyes, cold as steel, locked onto mine without a flicker of hesitation. "Mr. Mercer," she said, smooth as whiskey. "We need to talk." I didn't answer. Just watched her. Waited. She arched a brow. Not inviting me in? I leaned against the doorframe, arms crossed. "Depends. You selling something?" She smiled. "Slow. No. I'm collecting. The letter. I knew it before she even said it. She was the one watching me. A game of lies. I let her in. Not because I trusted her, fuck no, but because if she was bold enough to come to me, she either had a plan, or she wanted to see what I'd do. She walked through my shop like she'd been here before, eyes trailing over the tools, the half-finished float, the massive demon looming in the center of the room. Then she turned to me. I know about Carter Mills, she said. I stayed silent. He was looking into you for a client, she continued. Then he vanished. And you've been a very busy man lately, haven't you? My jaw clenched. You got a point. She tilted her head. I'm not here to turn you in, Mercer. If I wanted you behind bars, you'd already be there. I didn't buy it. Not for a second. Then why are you here? A slow smile curled at the corner of her lips. Because I need a man like you. The deal. Turns out, Elise wasn't just some bored rich girl poking around for fun. She had connections. The kind of connections that meant she knew exactly who I was, what I did, and how many people I'd made disappear. And she wanted in. There's a man I need gone, she said, pouring herself a drink from my liquor cabinet like she fucking owned the place. A problem. A liability. And I hear you're good at making problems disappear. I didn't answer right away. She was testing me. Feeling me out. If I said yes too fast, she'd know I was desperate. If I said no, she'd see it as weakness. So I played the game. Who is he? I asked, watching her closely. She sipped her drink. A club owner. Name's Dante Calloway. Thinks he's untouchable. He stole from me. I smirked. So kill him yourself. She laughed, shaking her head. No, Mercer. That's what I have you for. Betrayal in the air. Something was off. I knew it from the second she walked in. I didn't take contracts. Never did. I wasn't some hired gun. The people I buried were personal. But Elise wasn't offering a deal. She was forcing one. I don't take jobs, I said. Her smile didn't waver. Then I guess I'll have to tell the cops about the bodies inside that float of yours. My blood ran cold. I didn't react. Didn't let my expression change. But inside, I knew I was trapped. She had me. And the worst part, I didn't know what she really wanted. Because this wasn't about Dante Calloway. This was about me. The trap is set. I agreed. Not because I wanted to. Not because I planned to go through with it. But because I needed time. Time to figure out who Elise really was. Time to find out if she was working alone. Time to make sure when I finally buried her, there wouldn't be anyone left to come looking. The parade was only days away. The float was ready. And by the time the city erupted in chaos, Elise would be nothing but ash. Chapter 3. A Knife in the Dark. I don't get scared. Fear is for people who have something to lose. But when you've spent the last 3 years stuffing bodies inside Mardi Gras floats, there's only one way your story ends. You either disappear into the smoke, or you burn with the parade. I sat alone in my workshop that night, the weight of Elise's ultimatum pressing against my ribs like a loaded gun. She had me. And she knew it. She wanted me to take out Dante Calloway, a club owner with more money than morals. She thought she was playing me, forcing my hand, threatening to expose the bodies I'd hidden inside my floats if I didn't do what she wanted. But I don't take orders. I don't follow. I cut loose ends. And Elise? She was the biggest loose end I'd ever seen. The setup. The next morning, I did what she expected me to do. I played the game. I watched Calloway, followed him through the city like a shadow. He had a routine, same club, same expensive suits, same overpriced drinks. He thought he was untouchable, laughing with his cronies in the VIP section of the Royale, sipping a bottle of something that probably cost more than I made in a month. Elise wanted me to take him out quietly. A clean job. Quick, efficient. But there was nothing quiet about what I had planned. Because this wasn't about Calloway. This was about her. And I needed her to think I was playing along, until the moment I wasn't. The knife in the dark. That night, I met Elise at an upscale restaurant on Chartres Street, the kind of place where they charge you $60 for a plate of food too small to fill you. She was already there when I arrived, sitting near the window, a glass of wine in her hand, looking like she'd just stepped out of a goddamn magazine. I slid into the seat across from her. It's done, I said. She raised a perfectly sculpted brow. Already. I nodded. Calloway won't be a problem anymore. It was a lie. She didn't know that. Not yet. She sipped her wine, watching me. Efficient. I like that. I leaned forward. Now it's your turn. I did the job. So we're square. She smiled. Slow. Not quite. I felt it then, that tightening in my gut, the one that told me I was walking into something worse than I'd imagined. Elise set her glass down, folding her hands on the table like she had all the time in the world. "You think this is just about one job?" she asked. I didn't answer. "Calloway was the first test, Mercer. And you passed. But there's more to do." A slow burn started in my chest. This wasn't a deal. This was blackmail. "You don't get it," she continued, eyes gleaming. "I know what you've done. Every single one of them." She tilted her head toward the street outside. "And the cops? They'd love a little tip-off about the missing people buried inside your floats." I clenched my jaw. "We had a deal." She laughed. Laughed. "Mercer, don't be stupid. The deal is whatever I say it is." And just like that, I knew I had to kill her. Not later. Now. The struggle. The moment she stood to leave, I followed. She walked through the restaurant like she owned it, stepping into the warm night air, heels clicking against the pavement. I kept my pace steady, waiting for the right moment. I had the knife in my pocket. Easy to reach. Easy to end this. Then she turned. And before I could react, I felt the cold press of steel against my ribs. A fucking gun. I froze. Elise smirked. "You didn't think I'd come unprepared, did you?" I stayed still, the weight of the moment settling between us. She leaned in, her breath warm against my ear. "I own you now, Mercer," she whispered. "If you try anything, I'll make sure your little secret becomes front-page news." Then she stepped back, lowering the gun, slipping it into the folds of her coat like it was nothing more than a casual accessory. "See you soon," she said, before disappearing into the crowd. I stood there, hands clenched into fists. She thought she had me. She thought she was in control. But Elise just made her first mistake. She let me live. And now, she was on borrowed time. The night of fire. The day of the parade came fast, the streets packed with bodies, music shaking the buildings, confetti and beads flying through the air. The Devil's Procession was set to roll through at midnight, its monstrous form towering over the drunken masses, its flames licking at the sky. And hidden inside, the remains of Carter Mills. The pieces of every mistake I had ever buried. The plan was simple. Burn it all. Burn the float. Burn the evidence. Burn every last trace of the past. And while the city watched the flames, I'd take care of Elise. The final betrayal. I found her on Royal Street, dressed in black, her red lips curling in amusement as I approached. "You look tense," she teased. I didn't smile. "I came to end this." She arched a brow. "You finally ready to listen?" I reached for the knife in my pocket. But before I could move, she pulled the trigger. Pain exploded through my side. I stumbled back, gripping my ribs, warmth spreading across my fingers. Blood. Elise stepped forward, gun in hand, expression unreadable. "You should have just done what I asked," she murmured. I gritted my teeth, swallowing the pain. "Fuck you." She smiled. "Wrong answer." She raised the gun, and then the explosion hit. Ash instead of beads. The float went up in a firestorm. The Devil's Procession erupted in flames, its massive demon engulfed in an inferno that sent shockwaves through the crowd. People screamed. Sirens wailed. Chaos. The perfect cover. I lunged. The knife found its mark, sinking deep into Elise's side before she could fire again. She gasped, eyes wide, hand clutching at the wound as she stumbled back. "You," she choked. I twisted the blade. "Looks like the parade's over." She collapsed, blood pooling beneath her. I didn't wait. Didn't hesitate. I turned and disappeared into the smoke. No loose ends. Not this time. Chapter 4, Betrayal and Fireworks. New Orleans burned that night. Not the whole city, just the part that mattered. The part that held my sins. The flames from the Devil's Procession licked the sky, towering over Bourbon Street, turning beads and confetti into falling embers. The crowd thought it was part of the show. Drunken cheers and camera flashes filled the air while the heat swallowed the float whole. But this wasn't some planned spectacle. This was a funeral pyre. A graveyard of my own making, reduced to ash and smoke. And while the city burned, so did my past. Bleeding in the smoke. I staggered through the chaos, blood seeping through my shirt, every step sending pain shooting through my ribs. Elise had shot me, and even though I'd buried a knife in her side, I didn't stick around to see if she was dead. There were too many eyes. Too many people. And in the middle of it all, the cops. Blue and red lights flashed against the inferno, sirens wailing over the music. Firefighters stormed the street, hoses blasting water into the blaze, but it was already too late. The float was gone, reduced to smoldering ruin, its secrets melting into the pavement. And with it, every goddamn body I'd ever hidden. No evidence. No proof. Just ashes in the wind. But the pain in my side was real. Too real. And if I didn't get off the streets soon, I'd be the next body to vanish. I ducked down an alley, pressing a hand against my wound. Wet. Warm. Not fatal, but bad enough. I needed a plan. A way out. Because Elise had made one mistake. She thought this was over. But it wasn't. Not yet. A devil in the dark. I made it back to my warehouse before my legs gave out. The place was empty. No floats, no workers, no distractions. Just the stench of burned fiberglass and the echo of my own ragged breathing. I collapsed onto the worn-out couch in the corner, gripping my side. Pulled my shirt up, examined the damage. The bullet had grazed me, tearing through skin, but it hadn't hit anything vital. Lucky. But luck doesn't last. I needed stitches. A drink. And a fucking plan. Because Elise wasn't just some problem I could ignore. She was the kind that got under your skin. The kind that didn't die easy. And if she survived, she'd come back. The game isn't over. I barely slept that night. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw the fire. The way it devoured the float, the way the embers danced in the air like fireflies. And then I saw her. Elise. That smile. That smirk. Like she already knew how this would end. By morning, I was on my feet, my ribs screaming in protest. I patched myself up, some makeshift stitches, a bottle of whiskey to take the edge off. Not perfect, but enough to keep me moving. Then I made the call. Not to the cops. Not to a hospital. To an old friend. A visit to the dead. I met Reggie years ago, back when I was just another artist scraping by, building floats for pocket change. He wasn't an artist. He was something else. A fixer. A man who made problems disappear, for the right price. I found him in his usual spot, a back room at St. Joseph's Cemetery, where he ran his business out of an abandoned crypt. Reggie was old, slow-moving, his gray beard tangled like Spanish moss, but his eyes were sharp. "You look like hell, Mercer," he said, lighting a cigar. "Feel worse," I muttered. He motioned to a chair. "Sit. Tell me why you dragged your half-dead ass here." I sat, poured myself a drink, and I told him everything. Elise. Calloway. The letter. The blackmail. The gun. The fire. By the time I finished, Reggie was shaking his head. "You always did know how to stir up a storm." I didn't answer. Just waited. Finally, he exhaled a long cloud of smoke. "You want her dead?" I nodded. "Before she gets to me first." Reggie smiled, slow and knowing. "Then you'd better hurry, boy. The final chess move." I left the cemetery with a name and an address. Elise wasn't hiding. She wanted me to come. And that meant one thing. This was a trap. Didn't matter. I wasn't walking away. I followed the trail to a high rise on Canal Street, a penthouse suite overlooking the city. Her lights were on, waiting for me. The last betrayal. I picked the lock. Slipped inside. Silent. The place was empty. No guards. No backup. Just her. She was standing by the window, a glass of wine in her hand, watching the city below. "You're late," she said. I didn't answer. She turned, her red lips curving into that goddamn smirk. "You didn't really think I was just going to let you kill me, did you?" I pulled the knife from my pocket. She laughed. "Oh, Mercer. Still so predictable." And then, the gun was in her hand, pointed right at me. "You can drop the knife now," she said, voice like silk. "Or you can bleed out on this carpet. Your choice." I didn't move. Didn't breathe. The seconds stretched. Then, the door burst open. And Dante Calloway stepped inside. The double cross. My brain caught up faster than my body. This wasn't just a setup. This was a fucking masterpiece. Calloway grinned. "You didn't actually kill me, Mercer. Big mistake." Elise smirked. "I needed you to think you were in control. That was the only way you'd come to me." I clenched my jaw. "So what now? You hand me over to the cops." Calloway laughed. "Cops? No, no, no. We have something better planned." He pulled out a pair of cuffs. "You're going to work for us now, Mercer." Elise raised her glass in a mock toast. "Welcome to the real game," she said. Chapter 5, The Devil's Last Dance. I should have seen this coming. The second I stepped into that penthouse, I was already dead. Elise stood there, gun steady in her manicured hands, that smug smile plastered across her face. Dante Calloway loomed beside her, all teeth and arrogance, a man who thought he'd already won. They thought they had me trapped. But the thing about traps, they only work if you don't see the exit. And I always, always have a way out. The offer. Calloway tossed a pair of handcuffs at my feet. Put him on, he ordered, stepping closer. You belong to us now, Mercer. I didn't move. Didn't blink. Elise sighed, swirling her wine like we had all the time in the world. Dante, don't waste your breath. He's stubborn. Calloway snorted. Yeah, well, stubborn gets you dead. He pulled a gun from his waistband, aimed it right at my chest. One way or another, you're working for us, Mercer. Either as a corpse or a good little soldier. Your choice. I clenched my jaw. I could feel the weight of my knife in my pocket. But a blade wouldn't win this fight. Not yet. I had to wait. Play the game. So I did the one thing I knew they weren't expecting. I laughed. Elise arched a brow. Something funny? I smirked. Yeah. You. I glanced at Calloway. You think I'm just gonna roll over for you? That I'm just gonna be your little errand boy? Calloway's grin didn't waver. You don't have a choice, Mercer. Elise sipped her wine. Do be reasonable. You have a particular set of skills. Ones we could use. Why waste them? I tilted my head. And if I say no? Calloway's grin widened. Then you get buried in a float of your own. The escape plan. I kept my breathing even, my pulse steady. Elise thought she had me pinned. Calloway thought I was already broken. They were both wrong. Because what neither of them knew. I never walk into a fight unarmed. Calloway took a step closer, cuffs in one hand, gun in the other. I let him. He reached for my wrist. And that's when I moved. Blood and bullets. The switchblade flashed from my pocket, slicing across Calloway's wrist before he even saw it coming. He howled, dropping the gun, blood spurting from the wound. I grabbed his wrist, twisted, snap, and his screams turned into a ragged choke. Elise was already moving, the barrel of her gun swinging toward me. I kicked the coffee table between us, sending her stumbling back. The gun fired, a deafening crack, but she missed. I lunged, grabbed her wrist, and slammed her hand against the marble counter. The gun clattered to the floor. She cursed, eyes blazing with fury. You son of a. I didn't let her finish. I grabbed a wine bottle and smashed it across her face. She crumpled. Blood. Shattered glass. And Calloway? He was still screaming. The final betrayal. I stood over Calloway, breathing hard, knife still in my grip. Thought I'd work for you? I sneered. His eyes were wild, panic setting in. Wait, wait. I stabbed him. Once. Twice. Not quick. Not clean. Slow. His body twitched, blood pooling beneath him, his mouth opening in one last, desperate breath. Then nothing. I turned to Elise. She was trying to crawl away, blood dripping from her face. Her lips trembled. Mercer, listen. I crouched beside her, yanking her head back by the hair. You tried to play me, I whispered. Her chest rose and fell in shallow, panicked breaths. She knew what was coming. And yet she still smiled. Maybe, she rasped. But you'll never be free of this, Mercer. I stared at her. She was right. I'd been running from my own sins for too long. And now, it was time to end it. The devil's farewell. I left Elise bleeding on the floor. Didn't finish her off. Didn't need to. The fire had already started. See, while they were busy trying to own me, I was setting up my real exit plan. The gas line in the kitchen? Cut. The lighter in my pocket? Lit. I stepped out of the penthouse as the explosion ripped through the building, flames swallowing the suite in an instant. Calloway's empire? Gone. Elise? Dead or dying. And me? I vanished into the night. The last parade. New Orleans never stops. By morning, the parade crews were already cleaning up Bourbon Street, sweeping away the ashes of last night's chaos. The fire at the penthouse? It'd make headlines, sure. A tragic accident. A gas leak. Nothing to tie it to me. Because Elliot Mercer? He was already gone. No more floats. No more hidden bodies. Just a ghost, slipping into the crowd, another lost soul swallowed by the city. And maybe that was always the plan. Mardi Gras is all about reinvention. And this year? I got to start over. Somewhere out there, a new life was waiting. But first, I needed a drink.